Stanley Fall, Reel 3. What was your impression of the camp, my Denick? You know, was it a very big camp?
The area which we were brought in, to me, looked very, very vast, but I was very young, and it looked to me like a holiday camp, because you see a number of buildings with a middle, a very big square in the middle. Of course, there was a hanging area in the middle, because anybody who was supposed to run away was publicly executed. And of course, being young and looking at it, it was an experience and very interesting, because it was my first camp away from my parents, and I found my feet, as it were. But I was again very, very fortunate. Immediately after I was there for a few days, I was detailed to go to the kitchen, and that saved my life, because the kitchens meant I could eat, work and eat. And of course, the people there, who were French prisoners, political French prisoners, not necessarily Jews, there was a mixture of a lot of international. I remember French and I remember Czechoslovakian political prisoners, because they had a special badge. A political prisoner had a special badge to show that he's a political prisoner. Everybody had a different color. The Jews had Star of David, yellow. The Poles had a red triangle. But the political prisoners had various other colors to show that for what they're in the camp for. And in the kitchen, in particular, there were a lot of Czech prisoners. All I know, there were criminal prisoners, but they were chefs. They were cooking, and my job was to take the food out in big containers and bring the empties in again and clean up in the kitchen. And of course, it was a 10-hour job every day, and there were literally dozens of us doing the same job. But of course, it was warm. It was food was there, and I was fit enough to enjoy it. Because if you became ill, it wasn't a question of going into hospital. There was a hospital, but the hospital was the first stage for the guest chamber. Because there were no doctors. There was very little medicine, and there were no nursing. There was no such thing. It was like a staging area for the. So one had to keep fit in order not to survive. And I say food was number one, clothing was number two, and keep away from trouble.
Mm. What was your clothing? What were you wearing?
The clothes, there was an abundance of clothes, because there was, from the various people who died, there were a lot of clothing which, of course, everything was too big for me, but of course, the winter was ideal. And there were no specific. I mean, today in certain films you see that the prisons were striped. I don't remember any stripes in my camps. We only had civilian clothes which was passed on from other people. There was no definite uniform for prisoners in the camps I was in.
Mm-hmm. Where did you live, you know, apart from your work in the kitchen? What was your accommodation like?
My accommodation was a very large shed consisting of bunk beds. And everybody had, there were three tiers, ground, middle and higher. I remember I was always on the higher because I was young and I could climb up to the top. The people who were weaker and not well were either the lower or the first bunk. And it wasn't a question that this was my bunk. I mean, whoever came in, whoever took it, was there. It was completely bare, straw mattresses, and no cushions and no cover. But it wasn't summer, so it was no problem. No such thing as duvets or sheets or bedding. No such thing. We used to get up early in the morning to go washing, and of course when it was very cold, freezing cold, there's no hot water. No question of shaving, no shaving apparatus for the elderly, for the older men. So they used to have a little beard. And I, fortunately at that time, didn't have a beard yet. So the system was, in the mornings, after washing, we used to go and count to make sure nobody's run away. So the counting was taken, we used to queue up in tens, and we used to write by ten. And of course, arithmetic wasn't very clever, some of them, so either they used to make a mistake, they started off with a number saying being 1,000, and either turned out to be 900 or 1,010. So they used to count over and over again, and of course in the bitter cold or in the rain, when you stand first thing in the morning in lines of 10 to be counted and recounted and recounted, is not that a lot of people actually passed out fainted by standing, and eventually somebody in authority says, like, let them go to work. And the work consisted of, in the first camp, is taking stones from one part of the camp to another, carrying stones by hand, and then another group used to pick up those stones and take them back. There's nothing productive about it. It's just an occupation to keep people on the move. And anybody who couldn't do it was shot. And anybody who was distressed enough and wanted to be suicidal, that means only to go up to the electrified fence, touch the fence, and died. And a lot of people, I can understand, there were, as I said earlier on, the people who had enough. They couldn't cope because they realized that it's not, the abnormality of it was so severe to what they were used to, they could mentally couldn't cope, and they took their life, which was an easy way out.
Did you have any, you were on your own now, regarding family, but did you make friends with anyone? Did people sort of care for you?
Not as I remember. I was on my own most of the time. I was looking forward to the end of the war, and I felt that every day I can survive is near the day when the war will finish. Because of this, I didn't have any intimate friends until I got to the next camp. When, as an engineer, I was told to go to Skarżysko Kamienne, which is an engineering work, and about 500 of us were picked to do work in this particular camp. I was one of the youngest, and the reason for that is I don't know to this day. I believe that they wanted a young boy to do a specific job which is very important for the war machine, like boiling soap, distributing it to the machinery, and soap was a tremendous currency, even by the Poles. It was a question of, you couldn't get soap, and soap was, anybody finding stealing soap was shot. So they trusted to me, and I, because of this, the chief engineer who I was working under was helping me, and there my cousin was there, who lives in Israel today, in Haifa. She was the only survivor from my father's side, who I met in that camp. And of course, being able to support myself with food and clothing through the engineer's goodwill and help, and I was able to help her and give her bread and cheese and sausages and things which, of course, any surplus she had, she could sell on and barter for other people. And to this day, of course, she's been very grateful when I visited her recently in Israel. And of course, she's a lady in her 80s now, but she does remember that what I did when I was very, very young. Also, because of my acquired ability to have food and clothing, I acquired friends. And this is where, you know, by virtue of giving them various things, we became friendly and we had a social circle. But I was, the engineer I was working under was very jealous of me to make sure that I stick to my routine and make no friends, because he was afraid of so may disappear. It was very important that the quantity which he allowed for boiling over for the machinery doesn't disappear. I understand now, with hindsight, I understand that he wanted me to have nothing to do with anybody else but look after my own affairs. And of course, which I did, but I feel that destiny, or somebody looking over me from above, made sure that he looked after me like a father. And this is something which I say that not all Germans are bad Germans.
If I could, that was interesting, you know, because I asked you about friendships while you were in Majdanek. While you were in Majdanek, if I could ask you about that, did you have any idea that that was a death camp at the time? Did you know about?
The new, it's a working camp, and the work consisted of taking stones from one side to another, but at no time was it intimated or by the existing prisoners that it was an extermination camp. They said, we're here for a period, and we go on from there to other places. It's like a labor camp, as it were. But of course, I know my mother was there, and she never. I had heard from my cousin who was there, who my mother wouldn't leave because she was a fit person, and she could go out to work to another SLM. But she said, no way would she leave me because I'm in the men's camp. And then what happened to her, we don't know. I tried to trace after the war through the Red Cross, and there are no records of what happened to her.
What type of regime was it there? You know, the guards and the capos. How were you treated?
In Majdanek, I lived in the shed, in the one of the barracks, and used to go to work to the kitchen. Now, because of my specific job, I was not allowed to mix with anybody else, because you see, you can't, everybody has been allowed to go to a working party. There was a burial party, there was a cleaning party, there was a toilet cleaning party, there was a laundry party, there was a kitchen party. So therefore, the people who were allocated to do, they stick to their job. Otherwise, it's either they were unable to cope, which means that they were subjected to an extermination, or if they coped, they had to stick to themselves. In other words, to look after their portion, not put their nose in anywhere else. So we weren't mingling, as it were, in that particular camp. I was only there for a short time.
Mm-hmm. Did you get an impression of Was it a sort of well-organized, clean sort of camp?
The camp was clean. The only problem with it was that there was a hospital, and the hospital, as I said earlier on, was the next stage for the crematoria, because, you see, there was no medical attention. The doctor there had no facilities. I fortunately haven't gone to that. What I have heard from people who did go to the hospital, they said, no, we're going to the hospital because nothing they do for you. It's either you're well, or you go across the hill to be guessed. You see, it is not a question of curing. It wasn't a hospital with nurses, with medical teams. So the hospital was a stage next to the burial ground, if you like. This is why we are very anxious to leave, because they say, if you're well, you work. But you've got to work in the kitchen or work in... But as new people arrive, you've got to make a room for them. Therefore, the people got to leave. Now, there's only two ways. Either leave to work or leave through the crematoria. And, of course, there were working parties who... they were well not paid, they were well fed by virtue of having, the dirtier the job was, the more food the parties used to get. And that was an unwritten law. If you wanted to work, in other words, outside the kitchen was, of course, the best. That was a top priority, because everybody wanted to work in the kitchen because they could eat. But if you wanted to work in an outside party, now, the dirtier the job, the worse the job, the more food rations you got. Mm. So, from that point of view, it was well organized, and it was run basically not by the German authorities, but, as far as I remember, by the prison authorities. They were running it very, very well. And the only people I remember were Czech people, because I was working in the camp, and that's what I learned to listen and learn to speak Czech, because that's the only conversation we could have.
You said earlier that when you arrived, you saw the place where people were executed, hung. Were there any executions while you were there?
Yes, there were these three. During one of the counts, the commandant came down and he was speaking in German to say, by which time I understood. And that these people who are coming forward have tried to run away from a working party outside the camp. We caught them, and the penalty is that, and it's going to be done in front of you all, so that you know, if you want to run away, this is what's going to happen. And they were taken up, and was read out, and publicly executed. There were at least three executions, and there were two women and one boy, and there were three boys, and there was another number which I don't remember, but there were three executed young witness in Majdanek. This was really a psychological thing to make sure don't run away, because the place was situated in a marshland area, so that you run away, you either die in the marshland, or we catch you and bring you back here and hang you. So there's no question. But there was no way to run to. Because, as I said earlier on, I believe the Poles were as bad or worse then. Because they're only looking for a reward, to pick somebody up, take them to the police station, get the reward for it.
How did you cope with that? You know, this bearing in mind the background you'd had, to actually stand and see people hung, you know, did it upset you a lot, or...?
Well, it did upset us then. Would I have been older, and I would... See, I assume at that time, going back now in memory, that is normality. That is the punishment. That means if you do something wrong, you're going to get hung. Now, would I have been older, and understand what normality really is, I think this is that it is inhuman to do I think now this was like judge and jury and everything else, but at that time when you're young and you don't know what is normal, you assume that this is the right thing. This is one of the reasons I've survived, because I couldn't differentiate the difference between normality and abnormality, and I assume that normality is what I've experienced.
And were you expecting to survive at that stage? You know, did you ever wonder and fear that you might not?
Well, there was always, you see so much death around you. People who one moment are perfectly all right, and then they become ill and die due to disease, work, due to starvation. And you see people crying, and you think to myself, now, tomorrow I'll be like them. You see, because there's no end to it. So my job was to try and survive, to force myself above what I see. And this is another reason why I was strong-willed enough to withstand all the bad parts to say, I am going to survive. And my job is to survive because I want to see my brother, the only one I had. I knew then that it's unlikely that my mother is going to survive, or my sister, and my father, because I was on my own. But I knew my brother was still in England, and my job was to try and get to him, not knowing that if he's alive. So then, it was an instinctive survival thing built in me. And going back to what my father said, the war will be over and we'll be back to normal, and you've got to wait until the painter is defeated. Does it make sense?
I know there were some horrific mass deaths, weren't there, in Majdanek. There was one called Harvest, the Germans called Harvest Festival, where a whole lot of people were killed. Were you there during any of these very, or would you have been aware of them?
I was there for a short time, and because from there I went to an engineering firm. So my fortunate part was that it was a very short period as a transit situation. And I know very little. I only remember it was a very well-run camp, and I believe it was run by the prisoners, not by the German authorities.
So could I ask you now, you know, this business of being selected as an engineer, did they sort of give you a test or, question you about your qualifications? You would have been 14.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Not at all. You see, the majority of people who were either shopkeepers or students, but there's very few people who would say that they have got a profession or a job, and that being a carpenter was necessary, or being an engineer, or they're called in German a Schlosser, which is an engineer. Now, to do that was they're looking for professional people who can help the war effort. And if they found somebody, they kept, they say, we want them, because there was a demand by the German authorities outside the camp. This is what we want. If you got healthy young people who are qualified to do a job of work, so many carpenters, so many engineers, so many whatever job, plumbers or whatever, we can do with them. And I was on the list, but no examination necessary.
So could I ask you now, Mr. Fall, about your next camp, which is Skarżyska Kamienna? Whereabouts was it? How far from Majdanek?
This wasn't a long way. I remember there was quite a short trip by lorry. It may have taken probably a day. And when we got to Skarżysko Kamienne, it was a very big camp, which had three separate sections. It had an engineering section, making parts of armaments for the German army. It had a rocket section, which was loading powder into containers, and that was one of the worst sections because the people working there had a yellow complexion because the chemicals went through the skin and they lasted couldn't last longer than a few months. The reason for that was that it got into their skin, into the lungs, and they died. So the replacement to that particular camp had to be done consistently from work camps. And fortunately, the third one was a camp which I've never seen, but I've read since there were three different works. I went to the engineering camp, and where we had Poles working there who were paid, it was like going to work, and we were working on the, because they were engineers minding the machines. I was mixing with them because I had to deliver the soapy water instead of oil. There was no oil, a shortage of oil. So the Poles were very friendly to us, but of course of no help because they couldn't help. There was a shortage of food. We were getting a minimum of food. Our works were working on 8-hour shifts day and night without the rest, so that sometimes we work from 2 to 10, from 10 to 6, or from 6 to 10, so that what it amounted to, we worked, sometimes we slept during the day, during the night. My job was, as a soap boy, to work one of the shifts. And of course, the punishment was always very severe by some of them, because anybody found at night sleeping by the machine, the punishments were horrific by hitting, by kappas. People who were also prisoners, their job was to make sure that people don't sleep at night or during the day or laze about. But I, as I say, was directly under this engineer. I don't even remember his name. He was a slight man, and I had the most, with hindsight, fortunate experience that he looked after me indirectly, because would he have done it directly, he would have been punished. The severity of helping a prisoner, especially a Jewish prisoner, was very, very, very difficult. And being such a sensitive job as I had, a soap boy, which was a very big job.
What was the job? What did you do with the soap?
My job was he used to weigh out a number of big blocks of soap, and used to put it in buckets, and under his supervision, go into big boiler rooms. We're dealing about 1,000-gallon boilers where hot water boiled, and they used to put the soap in there, and the soap used to melt. And at the bottom, I used to take out through buckets, through a tap, and fill up, and used to deliver to the various machines. There are about 1,000 different machines, and everyone had to be topped up with that soapy water, and that soapy water was treated like, it's like oil, because of no oil. So I was a soap boy.